Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Pee-wee as Himself, Liza, a truly terrific, absolutely true story, and 1-2-1, John and Yoko.
Today, we have a theme going for us, and it is a musical theme to some extent. It's definitely a celebrity theme. Three documentaries, either just out or have been out for a little tiny while already, about celebrities, two of whom are musical celebrities. And I would like to start by talking about the one of these three movies that I like the most, which is not exactly a musical celebrity, but a very famous person, Pee-wee Herman, also known by his actual name of Paul Rubens. And the movie is called Pee-wee as Himself. And this is technically a TV miniseries. It's in two episodes, each one of which is the length of a feature film. So it's a pretty expansive look at Paul Rubens, aka Pee-wee Herman. He died a couple of years ago, but before he died, obviously it was before he died, he recorded an enormous amount of interview material with Matt Wolff, who is the maker of this film. And at times we see some of the exchanges between him and Matt Wolff, and he didn't always seem to trust Matt Wolff to do the right thing in this documentary, and Matt Wolff sometimes had to kind of coax Paul Rubens into saying the things that he was supposed to say and all of that. And that's one little interesting element of the film, is the interchanges that we see from time to time throughout the whole thing between Paul Rubens and Matt Wolff. But mostly what we have here is an account of Paul Rubens's career. And it's really interesting. I've always thought Pee-wee Herman is kind of an interesting pop culture figure. This movie makes me more interested than ever. Very, very interesting stuff. It turns out that Paul Rubens, the performer, the actor, the creator of Pee-wee Herman, actually saw himself as a kind of performance artist, even a kind of avant-garde performance artist, who is not just going to create this character, Pee-wee Herman, but who is going to turn himself into Pee-wee Herman so that he was a very large part of the time Pee-wee Herman. In other words, Pee-wee Herman would be a persona, a character who Paul Rubens would occupy for a very, very large amount of the time, all the time, for years and years and years. Eventually, and I think you can sort of see this coming, this turned into a burden. Paul Rubens realized that he wasn't always getting credit for having created and sustaining this character of Pee-wee Herman. People just thought Pee-wee Herman was real. And I have to say, I sort of fell into that myself. I can't say I was a close follower of Pee-wee Herman's entertainment exploits, but, you know, I would tend to forget that it was really this person named Paul Rubens who had created this and who kept this going over the years. In any case, that's what this movie really chronicles, and it shows how by near the end of his life, which is near the end of the film, Paul Rubens really felt that he had been overlooked. He just wasn't anymore really given all the credit he deserved for this creation. So I think this is all very interesting. And what we have is an exploration of that over, it's approximately 3.5 hours when you put the two episodes together. And I just found most of it really interesting to watch. Perhaps the single most consistently interesting aspect of this movie, which is called Pee-wee as Himself, are the very large amounts of simply direct into the camera interview material and sort of statements by Paul Rubens, who himself is obviously a very self-aware, a very thoughtful, a very articulate, and in many ways it seems quite a quiet individual, very different from the manic jumping all over the place, making funny faces, Pee-wee Herman that we are most familiar with. So that contrast alone is really interesting to watch. And Paul Rubens, I'll repeat it again, really appears to be a very thoughtful person who did these things in a very self-aware and consistent way and kept it going for years and years and years until eventually he felt that he had to retire the thing. And then he did, in fact, do a little bit of acting, a fair amount of movie acting and so forth, under his own name, Paul Rubens. And he got away a little bit from the Pee Wee Herman persona, but mainly he's always been known as Pee Wee Herman. Other aspects of Paul Rubens' life come along the way. The fact that he was gay, which shouldn't really surprise people familiar with the Pee Wee Herman character, who always struck me as being a kind of a caricature of certain gay stereotypes. But Paul Rubens was actually closeted for a very, very long time and even carried on, a little bit of publicity-minded romance with Debbie Mazur, the actor, and so forth, to kind of keep people off the trail. But he was gay. He was closeted gay. He really felt it would damage his career very, very badly if he came out. And he was probably right about that. Also, we have in this movie the scandals that Paul Rubens went through. There was one when he was arrested in a movie theater for indecent exposure. And the movie makes a pretty good case. This movie makes a pretty good case that it was a sting operation and he wasn't really doing anything bad. And it was an X-rated movie theater in the first place. And why in the world would people expect this thing to be such a scandal? And then the other one involved, he was charged with possessing child pornography. He had an enormously large private collection of gay materials, you know, very old pictures and paintings and drawings and texts and magazines and things like that. And apparently after he was charged with this and the collection was carefully scrutinized by the authorities, they found virtually nothing that could conceivably come under the category of child pornography. So anyway, these are other very interesting aspects of the movie. So Pee-wee as himself, if you're interested in Pee-wee Herman, then you'll certainly be interested in it for that reason. But it touches on areas of experience that are just as relevant now as they were when these things happened to him just a few decades ago. The child pornography business, the stereotype that gay people tend to be pedophiles, all of that stuff, and all of that. But mainly, I think what I got out of the movie was it's a very interesting portrait of Paul Rubens, this performance artist who created this sort of avant-garde character. That's why I always thought Pee Wee Herman was interesting. I always thought he was kind of experimental and avant-garde and kept it going for a very long time, then eventually managed to get himself away from that character a little bit, again, in ways that are very self-aware and show him to have been a really thoughtful and interesting performer. Pee-wee as himself, I really recommend it. Very, very interesting movie. Second film I'd like to talk about today is about somebody else, Liza Minnelli. And the title is Liza, A Truly Terrific, Absolutely True Story. Now, that is obviously a really over-the-top title. Unfortunately, and I have to say, this movie has gotten rapturous reviews from almost everybody. I think it's really overrated. And one reason is signaled by that subtitle, A Truly Terrific, Absolutely True Story. This movie is way too worshipful of Liza Minnelli. We see very interesting footage of her answering interview questions and talking about her career. And the movie covers her whole career from childhood and being the daughter of Judy Garland and the great movie director Vincent Minnelli, and how she came up in show business and how then she had to establish her own personality and all of that. It covers all of those things. The trouble is, I'm going to repeat that subtitle one more time, A Truly Terrific, Absolutely True Story, is that the movie is it's like the story of a saint. It's one talking head after another saying, she was so wonderful, and she did this so beautifully, and she was so fabulous. And then she ran into this terrible challenge, but she overcame it so enormously, and she is just so gifted, and oh, she's fabulous, and how wonderful she is. And after a while, I got tired of hearing these things. The movie was written and directed by Bruce David Klein. And I honestly think that Klein has just really gone overboard. It's like what they call in the technical literature a hagiography, the story of a saint. You would think that aside from a couple of missteps along the way, Liza Minnelli just did nothing but rise in her career, become one of the most fabulous entertainers of all time, and overcome whatever challenges came in her way. We do get a little bit of talk about the drug stuff. It was prescription drugs, apparently, but they really laid her low for a while, and she ended up having to go into rehab and all of that. So we do find out about that. But again, the movie's attitude is always, and she was wonderful there too, because she overcame it. And okay, that's fine, but a little bit less gushiness, I think, would have really made this a far better movie. That's the problem with it. One person after another just gushes and gushes and gushes. I actually have talked to Liza Minnelli. I think she's a terrific person. I think she's a very talented person. But this movie really could have been a little bit more subtle, a little bit more tempered in the way that it presents this stuff. We do see some very interesting people along the way, sometimes in present-day footage, sometimes in archive footage. One of her mentors was the great French singer, Charles Aznavour. We find out a lot about their relationship. Another one of her mentors was the very, very, very great choreographer, Bob Fosse. And one of the greatest things about this movie is that we do see little bits and pieces of Bob Fosse's choreography along the way. She worked with interesting performers like Joel Grey. She was very much mentored by John Kander and Fred Ebb, especially John Kander, the great songwriting team. And those people appear in the movie, and it's interesting to see them. Also, quite a bit of Mia Farrow, who appears as her present-day old self and has interesting things to say from time to time about Liza Minnelli. Michael Feinstein, the critic and sort of all-around show business person, is maybe the most prominent of the talking heads here. So there's a whole lot of interesting stuff in this movie about Liza Minnelli. The trouble is that it gushes too much. So if you want to have about an hour and a half or so of gushing about Liza Minnelli, this is the movie for you. If you'd like things to be a little bit more moderate, then this is not the movie for you. It wore me out after a while, to tell you the truth. Finally, one more documentary to talk about. Three documentaries about show business today. This one is called One to One, John and Yoko. And I think we all know who those two characters are, John Lennon and Yoko Ono. Now, this documentary focuses on a period in the early 70s when, for around a year and a half, John Lennon and Yoko Ono lived in a little apartment, a very little apartment in Greenwich Village in New York. It was just before they moved to the Dakota and had this fabulous, huge apartment in this fabulous, huge building. Here, they were living in a little apartment in Greenwich Village, really a little apartment, watching television all the time. And that is where the movie takes its cue from, because it is full of clips from old television and old movies. And this movie is really a collage, a montage. Much of it consists of just cutting from one pop culture artifact after another, one after another, one after another. There are TV clips, there are news clips, there are commercial clips, all these things from the early 70s. So it really gives you the flavor of that period of time. Also, obviously, we have John and Yoko weren't just sitting there watching television all the time. They also did other things along the way. And one of the things they did was to put on a concert called the One to One Concert. That's where this movie gets its main title, One to One, John and Yoko. And this was done after they saw on television a news report by Geraldo Rivera about a center on Staten Island that was meant to be caring for an enormous number of mentally challenged children. And the conditions there were horrifying. And the most horrifying thing in this documentary is a little bit of that early news footage from the 70s of the horrible conditions of these poor mentally challenged children being warehoused in this horrible institution. So Lennon and Ono saw that on television and decided we really have to do something to help about this. And so they had a great big concert at Madison Square Garden with all of the proceeds going to support the children at Willowbrook Institution, which is the institution with the horrible conditions. And it actually did make a difference in the lives of those children and really did help things out a lot and certainly called attention to their plight. So what we have in the movie One to One is footage here and there scattered throughout the film from the 1-2-1 concert. And hey, you see John Lennon and Yoko Ono performing. It's terrific. It's great stuff. It's wonderful. We also have all of those montage materials that I talked about earlier, all the commercials and news clips and whatnot. And we have just footage sometimes of a reconstruction of that apartment where they lived in Greenwich Village. And we see the kind of place where they just sort of lay around and watch television and thought about these things. Now, other things are also going on in the movie. For one thing is, they want to have Bob Dylan be at their big concert. Will Bob Dylan do it? Maybe he won't, because he's very, very angry at somebody they've been hanging around with. So it becomes a big project to try to get this person to apologize to Bob Dylan so that Bob Dylan will come and be in the concert. That's an interesting little subplot in the movie. Another subplot in the movie is Richard Nixon running for re-election as president of the United States. And we see kind of the progress along those lines, and we get a little sense of the controversies that came up then. And we see Nixon eventually triumph and get elected to a second term. And we all know that the Watergate scandal and his resignation are looming in the future. Another little subplot that goes through the movie is, for an exhibition that Yoko Ono is organizing, she needs an enormous number of flies, you know, like house flies. So how are they going to get these flies? And they have assistants working on getting a hold of these flies. And we hear bits of their phone calls all throughout the movie. And it becomes this little suspense subplot. Is Yoko Ono going to get the flies she needs for her exhibition? So it's a fascinating movie. It's very, very lively. It's a little bit discombobulated, but it's really meant to be that way. It's meant to be more of a collage and a montage than a linear account of what happened back in the early 70s. For me, it was a trip down memory lane. For other people, it will be an education into the wonderful world of John Lennon and Yoko Ono during their heyday back in the early 1970s. I recommend it. 1-to-1 John and Yoko, good stuff. So that is my somewhat musical, very celebrity-oriented story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films Pee-wee as Himself, Liza, A Truly Terrific, Absolutely True Story, and 1-2-1, John and Yoko.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.